Is it recording?
Yeah. Look back. How does...
We didn't like go anywhere.
What?
Happy October.
Hello, hello.
Hello, hello.
My name is Mauro.
And I'm Dan.
And happy spooky season.
Happy spooky season.
You know
season.
What's terrifying?
The demise of our planet.
And our oceans. Sorry. That was pretty good. That was
and
good.
And then we dropped the ball.
No, I know, but that was good. That was good off the cuff. Anyways, today we're talking to a pioneer of...
That's a good word.
Can I just...
Yeah, you can do your thing.
We're talking... we talked to a pioneer of conservation, Christina Mittermeier.
Mm-hmm.
So many things to talk about, but we managed to talk about all of them.
Yeah. I think
I'm still,
yeah, we're trying to keep these intros a little bit shorter because we know you don't want to hear us ramble on. You want to get to the meat of the podcast. But yeah. Honestly, you know, if you want to learn about how you can impact the planet in a more positive way, Christina is doing amazing work with Sea Legacy, with the tide.
Only one.
Yeah. Only one. Just here's the episode and go learn about the planet.
And check out the description below. To learn how you can get involved, donate to the tide, join the tide. Sorry, mm-hmm. Not donate to the tide. Join, and just get educated and listen to this wonderful human being tell you about how our planet is dying and how we
what we can do to save it,
which is very important.
So that's on you. Get out there and save the planet and listen to this podcast. Not necessarily in that order. All right, ladies and gentlemen, we are here with yet another incredibly cool animal person. She is the co-founder of Sea Legacy, a marine biologist, a speaker, an incredibly talented photographer, the amazing Christina Mittermeier. Thank you so much for being here.
It's so good to be here, Dan. I feel like I'm going to cry. I'm so emotional to hang out with you guys. Thanks for having me.
If we're going to cry, yeah, I will definitely cry.
I think we're all just going to cry, so we can all cry together because this is a huge... huge honor to have you here. Just the work that you do, which we'll get into, and just having to, you know, having a conversation with you already is an honor. So I don't even know where to begin because it spans decades.
Well, yeah, for
you're aging me, Mauro.
No.
Yeah,
please.
It spans months.
Please, it's the wisdom of it all. It's not the age.
But, so. I guess, Christina, for those people who are, you know, our followers and listeners who have not heard of you, which I don't know how, can you give them a little bit of a background about who you are and what you do?
Yes, absolutely. I think of myself as a communicator, and I've chosen photography to be the tool that I use to communicate. But in reality, what I am is an advocate for nature and for animals, for wildlife. And that's what I've been doing my whole life. So I started a career in science because I thought that science would be a useful language to convey the urgency to protect nature. And then I realized that people are better suited to talk a language they understand, like photography. You know, we all carry a device in our hands that makes us experts.
Right.
So it's an easier way to start the conversation. And at the end of the day, that's all I am. I'm an animal lover, and I feel like I'm here with my people.
You belong here. You 100% belong here.
You're definitely in good company in terms of the animal space. So there are so many things that we want to talk about with you today. But I guess my question to start is, what is your origin story? Where did this come from? Where did, you know, pre-saving the world Christina start?
You know, I think it comes a lot from, of course, our parents have such a big influence. And my mom is a huge animal lover. She likes pets. So I grew up with a lot of pets. And I grew up in Mexico City, but I was very lucky that we moved to Cuernavaca, which is one of the satellite cities, much more rural. And I had one of those incredible childhoods where you are kicked out of the house in the morning to roam cattle fields, you know, play baseball and try not to skip on the cow dung. and just animals. My mom had chickens. She also had peacocks and parrots and a very, very large pack of fox terriers that I grew up with.
Like 10 of them, right? I think I heard.
Well, you know, it was so hard to get rid of them, you know, when they had puppies. So it just kept growing and growing. But yeah, some of them were indoor dogs. Some of them were outdoor dogs. But
yeah.
Had your whole pack just ready.
Oh, I
So
know. It's
cute.
amazing to grow up in a pack, you know, to realize the politics of being a dog is really interesting.
Right? The whole, behavioral structure of like who's in charge, who listens to
And
who,
getting
who's
to
the
see that
submissive.
early on in your life too, you know, and like getting to observe it and be part of it is already like a beautiful thing in and of itself.
It really is. And I think that growing up close to animals and the drama of the animal world, you know, the animals that die, the ones that are born, it really exercises this muscle called empathy, which is the muscle we need to really live sustainably in our planet. And I don't know where it comes from, boys, for you, where you got your empathy muscle as boys, but I feel like it's such a blessing to have this love for animals and for nature.
Yeah, we always say that we don't really trust people that don't like animals, and
Yeah.
I feel like
You
that's a good
shouldn't.
rule of thumb for humanity. Like,
It's always a weird one when it's like, I get it if someone like I understand that I am an animal lover. I am, I am the guy who I will pull over to the side of the highway when it's pouring rain and bring the animal into my vehicle. Like that's just
In
how I'm
high
wired.
heels, yes.
In high heels, I will do that exclusively. But yeah, someone like I don't like when they are like I hate animals. It's just like what happened to you?
There's got to
Like
be
I
something
know.
there.
Like who
That's
hurt
not
you?
normal.
But so we know you're an animal lover. Now, I know you started off your professional career as a marine biologist, correct? So
That's correct.
what kind of
So
pulled you into the ocean?
I mean, like everybody else, you know, I grew up pouring through National Geographic, and I was in love with this book by Jacques Cousteau called The Living Sea, it was called. And it had just now I read it and I'm like, oh my God, what were they doing? Like they're on the Calypso following a pod of sperm whales and they accidentally run over the baby.
Oh my
And it's
God.
in the book, you know, and then they
Oh.
have to go back and kill the baby. Of course, this is the 1950s,
Yeah,
so
right.
can you imagine if National Geographic did that today?
Oh my God. The video would be viral on Twitter in 2 minutes.
Yeah, that wouldn't go well.
It would not go well. But I also grew up reading books about pirates, because I had this wild imagination, and I imagined myself going through the jungle and finding tigers and sharks and crocodiles. I mean, all of those stories of my childhood really have informed who I am. And you know, when I was deciding what to study in university, you remember the enormous pressure that we
Ugh.
face when we're in high school and everybody's asking you, what are you going to do? And I thought, you know what? I don't want to live in an office. I don't want to go on a 9 to 5 job. I'm going to be a marine biologist. But in Mexico in those years, the country was much more concerned with a very large growing population and how we were going to feed them. So there was a big emphasis on careers about, you know, exploitation of the natural resources that Mexico had. So I ended up going to study fisheries biology. And that is the study of how we use industrial methods to capture enormous amounts of wildlife for consumption. And I found it incredibly disturbing. I could see some of my classmates, you know, they were able to compartmentalize, you know, this massacre you're witnessing and imagine that fish don't have feelings or that the sea turtle that was caught by accident, you know, can just be discarded. But for me, the pain was really real. I just couldn't imagine it. So I persevered through my career and I graduated. And instead of going to work on a fishing boat or in the fishing industry, I went to work for conservation. And that's how it all started.
What was that first gig like in the
Well,
conference?
the first gig, I mean, you must have had a gig similar to this one where you don't get paid, but you get the opportunity.
Yeah, you
So
get
yeah, I
experience.
got a bunch of those.
you get experience. But it really was life-changing. I got a chance to go and be the biologist in a resort in the Yucatan Peninsula in the Caribbean. The owner was another animal lover, and he wanted to create a nature reserve. And so he wanted a catalog of the animals that lived in his property. And I got to be the lucky one. Didn't get paid a penny, but I had room and board and as much diving as I wanted. And I had a bicycle and I spent a year, you know, drawing butterflies and chasing monkeys and diving every day. Like, what's not to like?
Like sounds like the perfect life.
What do you need money for when you're doing that? Like, oh my God, that sounds so fun.
Absolutely, Mauro. But you know, it takes a special courage because I remember everybody in my life telling me that's a stupid idea.
Yes.
You know, you should be going to work for, I don't know, get a resume. And I was like, no, you know,
Well,
I
because
like animals.
society pressures you to, you know, get that 9 to 5 job, go to an office, make money, and they resent the people that drop everything and, you know, go off and live in a farm or go off and live in a boat. Why?
Exactly,
Those are the people that
exactly.
end up making a difference too. You know, it's not the people that are sitting in an office for
Yeah, it's
70 hours a week.
the scared people are the ones who are
I
saying, don't do this, don't do
yeah
that. But it's
yeah
like, well, you know, you live your life
I
and I
know.
live mine.
And then 20 years later, they ask you, how did you do it?
I didn't listen to you. I
Exactly.
ignored your advice and I went with my gut.
Yeah,
When you thought I was weird.
Dan and I always say if we ever get the opportunity, we're dropping everything and going
We're
to
trying.
wherever.
We're
Yeah,
asking
to
everybody.
where.
We've been harassing all of our guests. Who we had? We, you know, Shannon Wild.
Of course, I know Shannon
Yeah.
Wild. I'm wearing my Shannon Wild
Oh my
right now.
God!
Perfect.
Shout out to Shannon Wild. Yes.
So we had her
I
on,
heard
and I think we were harassing her into letting us come stay with her and her husband down near Kruger. Or like, I'm like, hey, I'll pay for my own airfare.
We'll be crew. Like,
We
it doesn't
like we
matter.
will. I am good at picking up heavy things. Like, I am great. I can carry stuff. You don't have to pay me. Just let us come hang out and like be around with what you guys are doing, and I'm in.
You know, there's an app then, what's it called? It's called Key. I'm going to find it, but it pairs people that want to volunteer with nature conservation jobs around the world
Oh
that
my
need
God.
help. I'm going
Oh,
to look for it because
That's a
so
great.
cool.
We actually should promo
Yeah,
that. We
we
should
got to
figure
get
out
on
which one
that.
that is. We'll put it in the notes. We actually, one of a client of ours, she's a veterinarian, and she's been putting me in contact with there's a conservation group in Belize. It's a veterinary clinic. So I worked as a vet tech for years before I started the dog walking business.
Oh.
So she's trying to get me to go down there. So I just got to figure out some time to go down and,
To Belize?
yeah.
Oh my
Well,
God.
you'll come, obviously, because what
Okay.
are we to not film it? That's.
You know, in my travels around the world, I've met a lot of people like that, just volunteering to lend their skills to a little bit of, you know, these enormous puzzle of animal dilemmas that we have. And I met this lady in Mexico, in Tulum, and she would go every year, pay for herself for a month to be in a hotel room, and she would just spay and neuter dogs all day long,
Yeah.
stray
Wow.
dogs. Yeah.
Yeah, there's some incredible
Yeah.
programs. Like my end goal is to be going to vet school. The dog walking business turned into a very long roundabout. I started it 12 years ago, so that was not the plan, but it's been a amazing
We're doing
opportunity.
this. We're doing
Yeah,
this.
like it's afforded me some really cool opportunities, being able to talk to a lot of really cool people. But like, you know, being able to, I think, you know, I work a lot and Moro works a lot, but it's you never when you love what you do, this isn't work. I'm getting to talk to really cool
Right.
people about
Yeah.
stuff that I love. It's like I feel like there's so many people out there who, you know, it's like, you know, get the job, you know, become the, and no offense to accountants, become an accountant, do this. Accountants are very important, Joe and Anthony, I love you. But it's one of those things where it's like when you have a passion, it's like this, at
It
least
drives you. It drives you.
like it's a fire. It doesn't matter
Yeah.
how much water you try to pour on it, you
Oh,
can't turn
totally.
it off.
Have you ever heard of the concept of ikigai? Ikigai. It's a Japanese word that
Ikigai.
means the purpose of your life.
Yes.
And you find your ikigai by studying the confluence of four things: the thing that you love, which is also the thing that you're good at, which is the thing that gets you paid, and the most important one, it's the thing that the world needs. And when you find your ikigai, you wake up every morning pinching yourself that this is what you get to do.
Yeah.
And that's where we are. This is where we are. We have our ikigai.
That is definitely where we are.
I
So,
love that, the
speaking of
ikigai. Yeah.
Ikigai, let's talk about some of your cool projects you've been doing recently. So, you want to talk a little bit
Yes.
about this little organization I've heard of called Sea
Oh
Legacy?
yeah, it's a little independent organization.
But this is another example of courage, right? Because Paul Nicklin, and he's gonna come and he's taking the dogs for a walk so that they don't disturb my podcast, but they're gonna make a cameo. They're gonna come
I
and
was
say
going to
hello.
say that the
Perfect, yeah.
dogs have to come in.
Oh, totally. Paul and I were working for National Geographic magazine, and we were at the top of our career as photographers. And if I'm an animal lover, Paul Nicklin is obsessed with animals, and that obsession makes him really good as a wildlife photographer because he has this sense of wildlife. Mm-hmm. Anyway, here we are, Paul and I, and we are getting the assignments that have to do with how the natural world is dying. You know, the blob in the Pacific that killed hundreds of thousands of sea lions, and we have to go photograph that stuff.
Yeah.
And I remember having a conversation with Paul that, you know, like, this is not enough to tell the stories on a magazine. Even if it has a big readership, nobody's championing the issues around this. And
yeah,
we left. We decided to start Sea Legacy. And literally in this room, just Paul and I thinking, what can we do? And we put $10,000 in a bank account to pay one assistant and start using social media. And what it was... really, it was to tell the stories of what it's like to do this childhood dream of, oh my God, I get to swim with dolphins. What does it feel like to spend a few days with a pod of sperm whales, or to chase, to follow the path of a grizzly bear down a trail? People want to know. They want to know if you were scared, if you were hungry, you know, the survival skills. And lo and behold, we started getting a massive social media following. And the people that were following us, they were not just liking and sharing, they were commenting, and they had tons of questions.
Yeah.
And it all crystallized for me when we opened a gallery in New York, and it was when Instagram stories were just coming out. And so Paul took his phone and he said, hey, we're opening a gallery and come on down. And we didn't know that half of our followers are in New York City. So we, we had like 2,000 people come to the opening in Soho. It was a zoo. And it was the first time that we had met our followers in person.
Yeah.
And these people were real, you know, and they were coming to the gallery, not because they wanted to buy fine art, but because they wanted to know that there's hope for the natural world. And they loved what we were doing with Sea Legacy. And it was amazing. Started growing from there until one day in 2017, we found a polar bear in the Arctic that was starving. And this animal was probably dying, I mean, several months in the process of just coming down to his last legs.
Yeah.
And we captured it at that moment. And honestly, when we put it online, it was just three people in Sea Legacy, myself, Paul, and Kate. And we're like, yeah, we're going to put it online. You know, and it went viral.
Yeah.
It struck such a chord with people, especially the people that love animals. Some people were really grateful, and other people were really surprised that we hadn't fed it or hadn't given it a plant. Yeah. I mean, people had ideas like, why don't we cover the Arctic with styrofoam? Mm. It was an incredible conversation, but a lot of people were angry. They were downright pissed and attacking us. And I asked myself why. And I realized that, you know, more and more as we are confronted with the demise of the natural world, if we are not given an opportunity to take action, it just becomes, you know, it backfires. People get really upset. So that's why we started building Only One as a platform that allows people to take action on behalf of nature. And it's going really well. People really want to do something. People really want to, you know, take the measurement of their love for nature and for animals to the full extent, and they want to do whatever they can. So it's a beautiful thing.
It's incredible, like, having grown up, and, you know, when I first went to college, it was, you had to have a college email to get Facebook. And it's just incredible watching, because I you know, I remember being like, oh, cool, it's like a fun way to meet girls and, you know, meet friends and stuff like that.
How do we get here?
It's insane. Just like, there's so many different things that, like, there's good and bad, but there's so much, you know, people are like, oh, social media is terrible. I mean, yeah, there's some awful sides of it, but they're like the reach that, like, because, you know, if this was 30 years ago, you as a photographer, you're basically getting in line. It's like trying to get into the NFL, getting into National Geographic.
Well,
like,
when we talked to Captain Paul Watson, he said that he was mailing.
Sweet name drop.
He was mailing 16mm reels.
Yeah.
To news channels.
Yeah.
And that was the only way to decimate information. That was the only way.
So true. And even when you're inside National Geographic, you still have to go through the bureaucracy of making a story happen. And at the end of the day, it's an editor, you know, who may be having a bad day, you know, and decides that your story is not what it needs to be. And off it, you know, out the window it goes. Paul and I really wanted to have our own distribution channel. And what's end up happening is he and I have the most followers of any photographer, male and female photographers. And it's a conversation that we get to have every day with people that really care. But it's also the top of the funnel for us, you know, people that may not have been invited to the conversation about nature and environment, you know, who feel alienated somehow. Through photography, we say, hey, you know, this is for you too.
Yeah.
Come and take a look at this very cool animal and let me tell you about it. And in a non-threatening, non-guilty way, invite people to really be the change that we need. And, you know, I love it. I get up every day and I feel a little bit of imposter syndrome that I get to do this. You know, why me?
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, you know, it's a huge responsibility and such an honor and an opportunity to invite people to say, hey, we live on a beautiful planet. Let's save it.
Let's take care of it. I also think that imposter syndrome thing, I've noticed with people who are really at the top of their field, a lot of them do have that. And I think that's what makes people very good at what they do, because it's not this like, oh, I'm the best and I'm blah, 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 blah. Like, you know you're good at what you do, but deep down, it's one of those things where it's just like, holy shit, how do I get to do this and like be have the opportunity to do it? Like, I get to, like, for me, with what I mean, I'm not the top of my field. I hang out with dogs all day long.
Number one dog walking company.
We were named Pet Sitter of the Year. So maybe you could put that, the magazine cover right there. But it's one of those things where it's just like, you know, I got kicked out of college twice. I was in rehab at 16. Like, I was a problem child, but like the love of animals is always there. This business is what turned me into like a business person. Like, I started very simply and, like, you know, I just all of a sudden had employees and I was managing people and I was like, I don't know what I'm doing. How is this happening? I'm not in charge of this. But it, like, it is nice to hear that even at your level of accomplishments that, you know, those kinds of things
so
do
true. Well, it goes back to, I mean, I don't know if it's stupidity or courage, but
they go like, hand in hand.
It's a fine line.
They go hand in hand.
But this acknowledgement that we don't know what we're doing, but hey, nobody else is doing it. So somebody has to. And
yeah.
What's the worst that could happen, Dan?
So yeah. you have a background in communications. When did you realize that, hey, conservation, communications, social media, you could use those three things to basically spread your message and let people in on the action?
You're so smart, Mauro. That's exactly what happened.
I'm very
so
smart.
He is very smart.
I was working with Conservation International and I was a scientific associate. So I was in charge of, you know, doing a lot of research and blah, blah. And at some point, a friend of mine who is an artist, you know, he started putting these beautiful coffee table books. And he didn't speak very good English, so he invited me to help him. So I was writing captions and writing text and the science and blah, blah, blah. And when the book finally came out, it was a thing to behold. It was so beautiful. Large coffee table, you know, cover, beautiful photography. I realized, as people were in the launching ceremony in this beautiful cocktail party, that people were not reading the text at all. You know, right. They were browsing and looking at the pictures.
Looking at the photos, yeah.
And they were asking questions. And it occurred to me, you know, this way that we have of talking about the environment in scientific terms turns a lot of people away.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Because nobody likes to feel stupid.
Alienates
and if
people.
You don't speak the language, you know, you much rather not even go there because mm-hmm. you're going to feel dumb. But photography is such a wonderful way for people to feel like they are competent enough to be part of the conversation. And so that's when it started clicking. And then I started looking into it, Mauro, and most of the conservation environmental work that was happening is funded by donors that are really bullish on this idea of funding science.
Yeah.
So funding communications projects almost to this day, really, really hard.
Yeah.
I keep saying, you know, people don't even know that we are in such a big pickle. You know, how are we supposed to find solutions if most people have not been aware?
Right.
So bigger, bigger investments in communications for sure. And I feel like Sea Legacy is the tip of the spear in making a change in that. But I can already see that so many other groups are investing in communications and proper visuals and storytelling.
Yeah, I mean, that's the world that we live in today. It's, you know, people aren't attracted to
the 15-second attention span.
They're not attracted to Instagram mm-hmm. because of the captions. It's because it's beautiful. Like, yes, the captions are great.
Yeah.
But it's those beautiful images. With, you know, it started with people taking pictures of their food and of their dog. And, like,
right.
It's turned mm-hmm. into this amazing thing. And I think that, like, you know, like you were saying, you know, sometimes when it is so scientifically oriented and somebody doesn't know the right terminology, people get embarrassed. They don't want to ask questions. They don't want to feel stupid. And it's like, you see a picture or a video of a starving polar bear, that's going to evoke emotions.
Right, and you don't know the backstory. You don't know anything. You just know, you just see a skinny polar bear with the bones sticking out. That's all you see.
That is heartbreaking.
And that tells you, that tells you everything about that moment and the situation that we're in. So you don't need to read
about
it. You don't need to educate yourself on that particular picture. That tells you everything.
That's right. You know, the other aspect of it, and I'm sure you guys deal with this as well, is the psychology of the whole thing. Like, because we have been leading the environmental movement out of conflict and guilt, a lot of people are like, you know what, that makes me feel gross and icky, and I don't want anything to do with it. You know, so trying to find an inspiring narrative that's full of hope and really invites people to be part of it, as opposed to saying, look at me, I'm a very cool photographer, I'm going to go on adventure, you know, and have all the good time.
Yeah.
But building something that is a call to adventure, to say, you know, I know that it's not for everybody to live on a boat, but come with me, I'll show you.
Yeah.
And, you know, people that are in a cubicle in New York, you know, they need a 5-minute break to see the world through different eyes every once in a while.
Yeah, I think it's super important because, you know, the reality is not every single person on the planet's going to be able to go and, you know, dive with crocs in Cuba or, you know, go swim with the orcas and like do these things. Like, you guys are sharing these really, really powerful images that I think, you know, for people like Maura and myself who are like, you know, we're very passionate about conservation and just the animal world, the natural world in general. I think, you know, your average person who sees this and then they read the caption of, oh, okay, this, like, you never know who is going to read something and what that's going to result in. Like, there's just such power behind just a single image and what it evokes. And I think, you know, it's sometimes people get upset, I guess, when they, you know, like you're saying, they don't feel good, they feel sad, or like, you know, it makes me
think
of
good,
well, any emotion I think is good. But it's like when the photographer was taking a picture of, I'm blanking on the photographer's name, so I'm very sorry if you're listening, he was taking a picture of, it was a child
with the vulture,
starving with the vulture, and you know,
well, he committed suicide, you know, because people were so awful to him.
Yeah. And like, but that's the thing is, like, I think people forget that, you know, as, you know, conservationist photographers, your job is to bring the image and share that stuff with the world so then action can be taken. And yes, of course, it is heartbreaking to see these things. But like the conversation that is then started from that, you know, I bet you from the footage of that polar bear, how many conversations were had at home around dinner tables at the bar? Like, did you see this today? How, but like it started the conversation.
And how many of those people went the extra mile to research and, you know, donate to organizations and actually educate themselves, you know?
Yeah.
Who has a whole chapter in her book about the starving polar bear? Do you know who Glennon Doyle is? Untamed?
Oh,
she's
familiar.
Kind of become like a guru. She's a wonderful writer, amazing, very philosophical. But she has a whole book, and she talks in a chapter about the starving polar bear and what it did to her daughter when a teacher in school shared the photograph, and this child, you know, just could not overcome. She could not just go to recess. You know, she wanted to know more about the polar bears and climate change and the anxiety around it. So that's why we built this tool, this only one platform, because one of the key questions that people always ask me is, how do you know if you're having success? And having our own platform allows us to have all those metrics. How many people are coming? What are they looking at? You know, blah, 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 blah. Instead of surrendering that data to a third-party application like change.org, we're able to really understand and build the sense of community that's needed. So now I can tell you that it's not just your signature, but 1.5 million people along with you demanding that we protect Antarctica. And we get to deliver those signatures in person. So we gave them to President Macron the day before yesterday. He takes it to the European Union, and we get to share those photos. So people are like, well, I signed these petitions, but I never know what happens.
Right. Mm-hmm.
We want people to know what happens to your signature and what happens to your $5 that you donate. It's not just you, it's this massive global community. So I think there's enormous value in it.
Yeah, I mean, that's been another really cool thing to see is like, you guys don't just go out, take pictures, then, you know, head on home. You guys have been involved in some policy change with a lot of different things that have been implemented around the world. Do you want to talk a little bit about some of these incredible things you guys have done?
Sure. You know, I've always believed in the power of the people, and I think we've seen it in historical moments like the birth of the Arab Spring when Mubarak fell in Egypt. You know, that was all a Twitter storm. So when we started looking at these massive number of people following us, we thought, you know, what if we get these incredible followers to act in unison to convince a politician of doing the right thing? Well, you first need to find out what is that one thing that we can actually move. So let me give you an example. We have been working with Senator Feinstein from California for several years now on banning the use of drift nets. And most Americans are so completely shocked that these type of fishing still happens in the United States, because drift nets are about a mile long and they're about 100 feet deep, and they leave them in the water for 24 hours, and anything that happens to swim through, you know, too bad. Whales, dolphins, sea turtles. I mean, the bycatch is a 9-to-1 ratio. So for one animal, for one swordfish, you kill nine other creatures. And so Paul, my partner, got in the water. He filmed the drift nets. We created a little video, and we had something like 200,000 signatures, and we were able to ban it at the state level. And then they took the legislation to try to get it banned at the federal level, but President Trump vetoed it and sent it
Of
back.
course.
So now we have a new Congress, and we are taking those signatures again to Senator Feinstein in a couple of weeks to let her know that she has the support of the people to ban drift nets. And guess what? I have a good feeling that this is the end of drift nets in the United States. I can't wait to share the good news.
Yeah, it's like I recently just read David Attenborough's most recent book. I'm blanking on the name of it.
You can keep talking, I got you.
But he was talking about basically the steps, basically what we've done to the planet, but the steps that we can take. And I
A
think
life on our planet.
yes, it is fan I highly
Oh,
recommend
nice.
it. That was my beach book last week. I was
I'm gonna write it down. A
yeah
life on our planet.
Yeah.
It's a very good
Released
read.
last year.
And you know, he talks about obviously the things that we've done to the planet. I think as a whole, people kind of are aware, like, you know, we've ruined the ozone, and we have all the, you know, the greenhouse
Right, the
gases.
overarching issues that we've all been aware of.
But it's this stuff that happens below the water. People are unaware of what happens when there is an ecological collapse, when you don't have these apex predators and you don't have these certain, you know, whales, how important they're the fertilizers of the sea. They are so important. And it's just like
sea algae. Like, you wouldn't think the sea algae is important, but it's incredibly important to humans. Not
And
even
yeah,
just like
if even if you're
if you
selfish,
like breathing,
yeah, if you like being alive.
If you don't care about anything else, conservation and rewilding and biodiversity are some of the most important things. You can be the most selfish person who doesn't care about any animal. It is important, because if that stuff isn't maintained, there is a finite amount of resources on this planet. Like, there's only
You
so
would
much you
think,
can
even
do.
if you are selfish, this pertains to you,
Oh, yeah.
to your livelihood. So I don't understand where this politicization of conservation efforts comes from, because it pertains to human race,
But
not
it's a very
political
good
parties.
question, Mauro. It's, I mean, you're very smart once again, because
Thank
it's absolutely true. And here we go again with we have not really properly communicated. So a lot of people that are selfish and that are very busy otherwise, they just haven't even heard. I mean, it was not taught to them in school. It was not part of the daily conversation that we needed to be having. And they were indoctrinated in this mantra of you have to make as much money and be,
Exactly, yeah.
you know, as cool as you can be, and the hell with the world. And guess what? We're not separate from the natural world. We're part of it. There's a wonderful book that I've been reading called what's it called? Three Parts a Grizzly, something like that. I'm gonna look it up. What's the name of the author? But it basically talks about how much genetic material we share with, you know, plants, with clams, with bacteria. It's all shared genetic material.
Yeah, I think there's this. You know, I say this a lot. We're so disconnected from our food, like the entire supply. Like, you know, you go to a grocery store and there's this, you know, a cut of steak and it's packaged. There's not an image of a cow on there. You know, it's a picture of a pristine farm, and you notice there's never any animals on the picture of the farm. It's just a little red barn, And it's just, we're so removed from, you know, where do we get our corn? Where do we get our wheat? Where does this all come from? What are the ramifications? No, you get it in a nice little package and it says Shmamaba Farms or whatever. And it's just so easy to just be like, okay, I'm going to get this and go about my day and go back to Instagram. And yeah. I think there's just this disconnect while from the, like a quality of life standpoint, yes, like it look mm-hmm. at now versus 100 years ago, it's very different for yeah. a lot of, at least in the United mm-hmm. States, for a lot of people. But that comes at a cost, and that cost has been really just wreaking havoc mm-hmm. on our planet.
Yeah, we're in so much trouble, and it's so difficult to convey without making people feel that sense of despair.
Yeah.
And so focusing on the things that we can still do, I think, is critically important. And knowing that, you know, when the right leaders are in power and they meet in places like they are meeting right now in Marseille, the mm-hmm. International Union of Conservation of Nature, momentous things happen.
Yeah.
And as we go into a series of meetings about climate change and international conferences, that's when the power of the people really matters, to make sure that the politicians we have elected around the world know that this is the number one issue. We have to restore health and balance to our planet. And it's their job, right? Guilting people into using less plastic or eating less meat will only work so far. Yeah. It really has to come from the top down as well. And that's the truth for corporate leaders as well. You know, they yeah. give us this line that they're doing everything they can. And on the other hand, you know, they are still doing business yeah. as usual. And I mean, what power do we have as individuals to tell them, you know, we are their stakeholders
yeah.
and we don't agree.
And we are the majority. I think the people that want to see the planet bloom and, you know,
yeah.
being shamed by corporations and, you know, leaders saying, hey, don't use plastic straws, they're bad. Hey, how about you stop pumping billions of, yeah. of gallons of oil into the Gulf and kill right. entire ecosystems, huh?
Yeah.
Because my plastic straws are not killing a 50-mile radius right. Reef in the Gulf.
The straw was a weird one. It was like, hey, look over here.
Yeah,
look
exactly.
over here.
That's right.
Oh,
that's right.
This, look at the picture of the straw on the sea turtle. You sad? Look, we're fixing yeah. it. We made you a paper straw you can now put in your plastic cup. Oh, well, thank goodness. Now
we're making progress.
We are saved.
But yeah, it does have to come from the top, because
it really does.
I also,
going back to the selfish aspect, there is a lot of money to be made in creating sustainable businesses. Like there are multi-billion dollar potential ideas out there.
Even done sustainable with energy.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Like
put all that oil money into solar,
yeah.
and you will make money. I promise right. you. You will make just as much money.
No, you'll make no. You know who's going to make the most? Whoever can find a sustainable solution for batteries.
Batteries, yeah.
Energy
yeah.
storage
well,
is going to be the big one.
Did you read that article?
Yeah.
Did you read
yeah.
that article on, was it Time Magazine today, on the mining of the deep sea?
Yeah.
It's mm-hmm. terrifying.
Yeah, no, it's
terrifying.
I think
we're running out of good solutions.
I think comet mining, comet and meteor mining is going
that's
to be.
That's where we're going. That's where we're going.
I remember like 10 years ago reading an article that, what is his name from Google?
Sergey?
Yeah, Sergey Brin.
Larry Brin.
Page and Sergey had both invested, I think it was like $10 billion into like a meteor mining company. I was like, that's insane. And I'm like, what?
Could happen.
Kind of yeah. makes sense. And it honestly might be a good thing.
We're also running out of helium. Did you know that?
Yeah.
Like, gosh.
We're running out of so many
things. And you
things.
Know, this makes me think about something, and that is just the other aspect of the whole conservation environmental conversation is just how underfunded it is
yeah.
still to this day. In the United States, which is the most philanthropic country on the planet, mm-hmm. Americans, we donate about $480 billion a year for charity. About 32% of that goes to religious causes.
Mm-hmm.
And then from there, it goes to education, arts, health. And at the very bottom of that pyramid, 1.8%
That's
goes
it?
To a big category called the environment. And that includes all of the ocean, all of climate change, all of the Amazon, the forest fires, and dogs, cats, and horses. So
wow.
basically all life on Earth. And 1.8% of charity goes to that. So we need to tip that pyramid. And we really need to start investing in the organizations that are at the front lines creating the change, you know, because we are systematically underfunded. It's terrible.
I think it's just so frustrating because it's just like, you guys know we're all riding on the same ship, right? Like,
yeah.
We're not in separate exactly. boats
There's
here.
There's no other planet. Like, sorry to tell you.
I don't know about you, but my spaceship is not ready to
segue.
Go to another.
There's,
okay.
There's no. only one.
Here you go. See? See how smart he is?
There's only one planet. Only dot
only
one.
Only one ocean.
Yeah, it's...
Only dot one.
So, obviously... through the use of images and, you know, these platforms. What do you think, because obviously we want there to be some hope here, right? So for the younger generation of people listening, where are you the most optimistic about where these things can improve and like what can be done?
I think the how ingenious humans are yeah. is a real source of hope. And we have turned our planet on a dime before, and I think we're going to do it again.
Yeah.
But it's going to take a lot of creative thinking, and it's going to need a lot of what's happening right now with all of these movements is that they're very fragmented
yeah.
and unrelated. And we need to find a way to come together and to have real power. I am particularly hopeful about the power of the ocean as a solution to climate change.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You were just talking about whales, but there's ecosystems like mangroves and seagrass that are incredible carbon sequestration machines.
Yep.
Who was it Elon Musk that was going to give billions of dollars to whoever invented a machine to absorb carbon?
Yeah.
Guess what? We already
yeah, we have
it.
Animals
yeah,
to do
seagrass.
It.
It's called kelp.
It's called kelp,
kelp farms.
Exactly. So we need to start a massive ocean reforestation process for kelp and for seagrass and seaweed. And guess what? We can eat it too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's restarting the biological pump of our planet. And at the same time, I think the policies need to change to stop rewarding the companies that are destroying the mm-hmm. planet. And I think actually, honestly, cryptocurrencies are going to have a huge impact. Right now, they have a very bad environmental impact.
Yeah.
But as I mean, don't be fooled into thinking that Bank of America doesn't have an environmental footprint.
Yeah,
oh, yeah.
Exactly. Yeah.
Except Bank of America excludes a lot of people that are not invited into the financial conversations,
yeah.
whereas cryptocurrency is very democratic.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And I honestly think that as we take the power away from the companies that are investing in these projects that destroy the planet and take the power back to the people, I mean, we stand a much better chance, I think. What do you think? I'd love to know.
Well, I was going to go back to the funding. I just can't believe that it's
the 1%,
that
1.8%.
But
yeah.
the amount of change that has happened with all different organizations, you know, bringing animals back from the verge of extinction, changing legislature.
Yeah, aren't pandas no longer extinct?
Like just all these amazing
no
things that organizations have been able to do while being underfunded, severely underfunded. Just imagine what could happen if we
yeah.
properly funded all organizations trying to save the planet.
Yeah.
If they can
yeah.
do so much with so little, imagine what they can do
yeah.
with just a little more money. It's just so frustrating.
I know. So my invitation to people that listen is always to say, you know what? You want to sleep well at night, align your wallet to your values. And if
yeah.
this
mm-hmm.
is something you care about, let's start investing in the future of our planet. Because guess what? Governments are not doing it. And,
exactly.
you know, maybe $1 a month is not a lot. But when you add it to millions of other people,
exactly.
yeah.
it actually starts to add up. And for us, you know, I've discovered that the thing that really creates the difference is this is not money for us for Sea Legacy. You know, we reinvest the money in frontline heroes that are out there, you know, patrolling the beaches and
yeah.
cleaning up and, you know, replanting coral.
Mm-hmm.
These are the people that are holding the fort while we're being selfish and doing our thumbs.
And being able to, like you said, you know, show that, you know, what your money is buying, what your signature is causing.
Yeah.
It's so important because a lot of organizations don't do that. They don't tell you where the money's going.
The breakdown, the transparency.
Yeah, they don't
stuff.
Give you like $10 gets you this. You know, there's nothing, there's no
yeah.
specifics to
about, like the tangible impact.
Right, tangible impact. So it's just
yeah.
nice to have organizations like Sea Legacy where, hey, your signature mattered.
Yeah.
We took this to the UN. It's like
yeah.
being it's like being talked it's like being talked about right now.
Yeah.
And your signature is in that piece of paper.
I think another
yeah,
thing
exactly.
that's exciting is like there's you know, you've got Greta, there's a new generation of kids who are growing up and they're like, You guys really...
This is their future.
You guys really dropped the ball on this. Yeah. Like, so, you know, I'm blanking on his name. The kid who created... He's not a kid. He's an adult now. But the guy who created basically the plastic skimming for the oceans.
Oh.
Yeah. I know exactly who you're talking about.
That's going to turn into like a nice sizable... That's a sizable company now. Like, they're reusing all this plastic and there's so many great things. Like, I'm actually very excited to see what this new generation of kids who grew up with their thumbs attached to their phones.
Oh my God.
Oh, we have a special guest.
Hello.
This is Paul Nicklin.
Hey, I heard
Dan and
I heard you're good with a camera.
Yeah. Guys, I don't know if you can hear. He can't hear us, but
he can't hear us, but
Hello. So we hear you like taking pictures. Yeah, is that right?
You're familiar with cameras, right?
Do you know what an aperture is?
I like being Christina's assistant. It's my favorite role. Keep her alive underwater while she makes her match.
So what they really want to see is your dogs.
Yeah, Paul, you're great, but we're here for the dogs.
Come here. Yes. Come here. Okay, you guys want to see something amazing?
Oh, yes. Please. Okay. Oh, my God. Yeah,
but you have to make them howl.
Oh my God.
Oh, they howl.
Okay, so this is going to be a big hello. Ready?
Okay, ready? You guys want to howl? Oh, 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 oh.
Did they just howl their way out of the room?
That was instant. You went ooh and that's it.
They live to howl.
Oh my God.
If they're not into it, they bark and don't howl.
You guys have had them for a couple of years, right? You got them back
nice
in like...
Nice to meet you, gents.
It's nice meeting you too, Paul. Thank you.
Thank you. Oh, that was awesome. That's the first guest appearance. That's the first guest appearance that we've had while talking to another guest.
Yeah.
So that was good.
Yeah, howling is very important because it makes us feel like we're all part of the same pack.
Oh yeah,
and that is exactly what we're trying to do with Only One.
And you don't yell at them. You don't yell at them for vocalizing or being who they are.
No, they need to howl. They're dogs.
They were found on the street, right? Was there a friend of yours who found them?
Well, you know, Paul and I travel so much, so we were never able to have any dogs. A friend of ours went to La Ventana in Baja in Mexico to kiteboard, and they went over a period of 3 years, and they could see the little white one deteriorating.
Right.
So he used to work in a restaurant, and then he got kicked out by a larger dog, and he was in such bad shape, full of cholla, all the thorns from the desert between his paws. And so he phoned us, our friend, and he said, you know what, this dog is going to die. He needs a home and you guys need to take it. And Paul and I debated it and we're like, okay, we'll take it.
Sure.
And so then you're super excited, right? The dog is coming and we're paying for the vet and they're, you know, teaching them how to go on a leash. And then our friend phones like a week before having to come home. He's like, well, you know, this dog, he has a friend. They're always together.
And that dog has a friend, and that dog has a friend.
And now we have 40 dogs.
We ended up with Buzo and Pingo, two boys, and they're the best friends. And they're such a rich part of our life. Oh, they're the best.
They really, honestly, like any sort of animal, whether it's a pet or like, you know, when you're living in, if you're living in the woods, there's animals basically that you kind of get to know. Like, they just add so much value, I think, to your day-to-day. It's just that there's, obviously with dogs, there's the unconditional love.
I think they put everything into perspective. Just being around animals, like, oh.
We're part of something bigger.
We see ourselves as, like, just this, you know, top
of the food chain. I have a question for you.
Yeah?
Where do you think that comes from? Because for me, you know, I don't remember a day in my life when I was not mesmerized by a squirrel or by, you know, the little bird. I've always had this love. And then there's people who could care less. Why?
I mean, at least for me, I think it's part of it's inherent. Yeah. I think it's one of those things where, you know, there are people who are born super passionate about building stuff or, you know, doing this, doing that. I grew up in a household where when I was an infant, my dad put our then puppy in the crib with me and she would sleep in the, my mom was like, you can't put a puppy with an infant because you should know better. But you know, he would share he would literally go lick for lick with the ice pop with the dog. So like I grew up just, you know, with a family of animal lovers. And I think especially for kids, it teaches you, like you're saying before, it teaches you that empathy. It gives you, you know, it teaches you compassion, especially when you're dealing with like small little, like, you know, a little chinchilla, they're these little vulnerable, or like a little hamster. I don't know. At least for me, it's just always been this thing. One, I've always been fascinated by like whether, like when I would play soccer, when I'm saying this very loosely, play soccer, I would be out in the field picking up the bugs and looking at them because it was just, it's a different world. And it's just like, it's something that we are so removed from, but it's fascinating. There are these tiny little monsters and all these crazy animals, even going down to the microscopic level. I remember the first time I got to look under a microscope I was just like, this is amazing.
In middle school, yeah.
Like, I'm getting goosebumps talking about it because it's just, it's had such a profound impact on my life. And again, goes back to like, we're very lucky to do this stuff. But at least for me, it just, I think it's just how I'm wired. You know,
I think it's exposure from early on.
Yeah.
If you're exposed to animals from early on, there's no way you can't grow up to be an animal lover.
Yeah.
And especially if you think about them as fellow passengers on this little spaceship, right? Yeah. And I often think about these people, you know, whenever somebody says to me, well, we don't have to worry about this planet because we're all going to live in Mars. And it makes you laugh. Like,
we're not living on Mars.
Mars is where the Earth is going if we don't do something. That's what Earth is going to look
like. But even if we were going, imagine that Elon has sent you your ticket and you're one of the 8 people that are going to go. Mm, the first thing that you would get when you step on his spaceship is an incredible briefing of how everything works, because every piece of that spaceship plays a role in carrying you across the universe.
Exactly.
And this is true for our spaceship as well. And we know nothing about it, you know, and we've been taking apart nuts and bolts with complete disregard.
Yeah.
And we're very close to losing our fuselage. So,
I think there's two things that need to be taught in mandatory for all high school students. It's one, environmental studies and just understanding how the planet works.
Yeah.
And two, financial literacy. I don't think there's enough of that because like you come out, I remember getting out of high school being like,
what are taxes?
How does any of this work?
What are taxes?
Yeah.
What's an invoice?
I still don't know. But going like, the education aspect of it is a huge problem. And I think it goes back to the underfunding of education itself. Like we have biology and from my experience, it was biology and this other course, living environment in terms of ecosystem.
Yeah.
And living environment was a lot of fun. We talked about ecosystems. We got to look under microscopes and look at little cultures of bacteria and amoebas and it was awesome. Mm-hmm. But you know, other than that, there were no conservation talks.
No.
You know, they would tell us, hey, the Amazon is being deforested at an alarming rate. Okay, why? What's happening? Like, no, that was it. That was the only information you got. Nothing how you can help. If you tie...
And it didn't bring it back to your lunch, right?
Yeah.
That burger you're about to eat comes from the Amazon.
Right. There's no connection to it whatsoever. It's just like, this is what's happening and you need to accept it. You can't do anything about it. Mm-hmm. That was basically the education system, at least from me.
So the one AP class I did take that I actually did well in high school was AP Environmental.
Yeah.
And I think this is one of, I was not a big reader growing up, at least in high school. I thought it was cool. And I remember reading Silent Spring and learning about, you know, all of these
things. Me too, Dan.
And it was just, I remember reading it and being like, how is nobody freaking out about this? Like,
and we just casually were reading that.
Yeah. And it's just, there's so many things that, so many like relatively simple things that can be done that, you know, we can change. And I think at the end of the day, we vote with our dollars. You know what I mean?
That's
like
so true.
What we spend our money on, you know, you're basically telling these companies, if you're willing to allow it, you're going to continue to allow it. You know, it's, I think that's another really important thing. I think, I'm very excited to see that in the future is like where
you
companies
go. I started researching how banks use our money to fund these mega projects.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I moved my money to a bank that puts planet and people first, you know, and I actually looked into it and eventually I had my whole portfolio be fossil fuel free.
What bank did you switch to? Or is that too personal?
Oh my God.
I was trying to plug.
No, it's not too personal.
I was trying to plug the bank.
You know, I mean, it's not that difficult to do your own research. For me, it was my 401k, my retirement money. I put it in a company called Blue Blue Marble Investments.
Oh, I like that.
And they give you a choice. You can invest in women's and you know, in freshwater, in oceans, and you know, you can choose a portfolio of things that are good for the planet instead of destructive. And it took me less than a half a day to move my money from a bank that I had no idea what they were doing with my money.
Yeah.
Wow, I never even thought of
that. Yeah, I think that's the thing that people don't think about is like how far reaching the impact of everything goes.
Every little
thing. We're all on the same planet.
Yeah.
Like the money, the food, we're not going anywhere. Everything. Like, yeah, I don't know about you guys, but I'm stuck here. So
yeah, and I don't want to go anywhere either.
Yeah, I like it here. There's cool stuff.
Yeah, I like to look at the animals.
I still got to go to Madagascar. Yeah. Like
I want to go to the Galapagos. Yes. Like
the Galapagos. Yes. So Moro and I work with BuzzFeed, and we are aggressively trying to push them on us doing a little travel segment where we basically want to go out into the field and speak with people like yourself
who are doing front lines.
But like actually go out there. So like selfishly, want to be there.
So, you know, Sea Legacy 1 is going to be in the Galapagos in October, November. And if you guys find your way there, you know, we'll take you for a couple of days. So let's go and find some cool animals.
Our idea was...
I'm sweating with excitement about the idea of that.
With a lot of these organizations on the field that don't have the media literacy that Sea Legacy has, we would be more than happy to strap some GoPros around and show people what these organizations are doing because they don't have the resources or the manpower or the skill to edit some video and post it online. And there are a lot of organizations that need that. And honestly, if we could
I can introduce you to organizations that need that.
Yeah.
You know? Even just to have the audio, like a podcast, like an NPR type thing from the field.
Yeah. Like 100%. Yeah, definitely. Let's make it.
Because like they are like, like no offense to them, but they're kind of busy out there in the field focusing on things. So I would love to just be a fly on the wall, you know, not interfere with anything, help out with whatever they want. And, you know, show the world what they're doing, how they're helping the world.
It's, you know, like what I grew up, I absolutely admired people like David Attenborough, you know, Jack Hanna, Jeff Corwin, who still hasn't responded to my emails. Jeff, please. But it's one of those things, like you're saying, like, you know, yes, I got the exposure at a young age. I failed out of my freshman year of college. I wasn't drinking. I wasn't partying. I was sitting in my dorm watching Animal Planet like 18 hours a day. Like that is legitimately why I didn't pass my classes.
The one about the meerkats is phenomenal. All of them.
Oh, the Meerkat Manor, like all of those shows. Because it's just like one of those things where like, you know, we don't see this day to day. You don't get to see what's happening on the Serengeti. You didn't get to see all this stuff. Whereas it's just like, being able to actually capture that stuff and share. Like you and Paul have, I think, a unique set of skills because you have the photography talent, but you also recognize the importance. And, you know, I think Captain Paul had the same thing too. You recognize the importance of, it's great if I see it.
The medium is the message.
Yeah. Is that what he said?
The medium is like, the message.
No, it's Marshall McLuhan. Ooh. You never learn about?
No, I'm apparently an idiot. Remember, I failed out of college twice.
The medium is the message. Marshall McLuhan. Look, he has a whole book on it. You could,
All right.
Let's write that again.
I'll add this to my book.
The medium is the message.
Are we going to have a book club? Dan and Moro's book club.
It just goes back to being able to show people what's going on.
Yeah.
Because I know we know the things that are going on in the world.
Yeah.
The just every horrible thing that has happened because we get it fed through our feeds.
Yeah.
Every single minute, every single hour. But just being able to see it in an image, that's so powerful. And just it makes you want to act.
Yeah.
So with that being said,
how can
someone act?
Yeah, what are the ways people can act?
How can we help?
So I'll tell you where I had a huge frustration seeing what Greta was doing and bringing millions of people out into the streets, and then people would go home and they would disappear, you know? So when we built Only One, it was this desire of connecting people to say, come and be part of this community, and I'll give you an opportunity to be activated every day, you know, sign a petition, donate, blah, blah, blah. So please go to only.one and become part of this community. If you are able to spare a handful of dollars a month and you want to invest in the future of this planet, you can become a member of the Tide. and Tide money, which now we're raising something like $2 million a year, we re-grant and we give to smaller organizations who do not have the photographers, who do not have the access that we have, because they need it just as much. And but because you need to hear the inspiring stories of what's happening out there. And so it's a way of reminding us that we are all connected, that there's a lot of good stuff happening, that we need to make these investments and we need to be the architects of our own future. So come and be a part of it. We need an army, and it starts with one.
And you can set up monthly donations, which is, I think it's very important, because, you know, people
sustainability.
People forget. Like you can donate, you know, $20 and then just forget about it and never follow
Subscription model works for nonprofit and for profit.
But I like the fact if you go to only.one, there's you have petitions, you have keynote speakers, you have it seems like a great resource to you know, get educated.
And we're just getting started, Mauro. We launched only one in the middle of the pandemic, and so it's fairly brand new, but we already have these massive. You know, the thing that I like the best is that we are supporting so many other organizations.
Right.
We are partnering with about 70 other groups and trying to lift everybody up. Yeah, point the spotlight on their issues and the work that they're doing, and, you know, funnel the money to them.
Right.
Yeah.
And so my favorite thing about what we're doing is this aspect of transparency, and to say, you know what, I'm going to tell you how your $5 made a difference and how your signature made a difference and how we're doing this together. Because I fear that despair is just paralyzing.
Yeah.
So we need a little hope and a little inspiration.
Yeah, I think that.
And we need to punch greed in the face.
Absolutely.
That's a huge.
We need to become investors in our own future.
Greed is the number one problem.
Or redirect it. If you're going to be greedy in a way that's sustainable. You know what I mean?
Like sustainable greed.
Yeah. Like I don't get me wrong. I want to make a ton of money. But the main driving force for me in terms of making a lot of money is I want to have an impact on people's lives
back
in
also.
A positive way. Like.
Yeah.
While I started the dog walking business, I was running a small nonprofit with a few friends of mine where we provided kids with access to food, water, education, and shelter. Mm. We bought a plot of land in Kenya and we built a children's home. It cost us $30,000 to build a home, have farmland. We had staff quarters and we were able to pay for these girls $30,000. That's like more
that
than that's not even my rent for the year.
That's a bathroom here.
Yeah,
that's
and
renovating
it's like,
bathroom.
So much can be done. Like I had no business running a nonprofit, like none whatsoever. But we did it. We used the power of social media. We harassed the crap out of people. Like, hey, we're doing this. Get on board. Can you help us? That was good.
You were in Kenya.
Because I was in Kenya. That was a good one. I didn't even see. This is why we work. You can't leave me hanging like that. But like, I think there's, I guess the big thing for anyone listening, if you want to do something, I'm an idiot. I had no idea what I was doing. If you are passionate about it and you have Google, you can figure out a way to do this kind of stuff. And like, you know, you guys are, you're honestly making it easier for people to have an impact. By you're aggregating the money and the resources and you're distributing it to the right organizations.
But there's one more thing, you know, and this is, I listened to this TED talk and it changed completely the way I think about charity. It's by a gentleman named Dan Palota, P-A-L-O-T-T-A. And he talks about how the charity system in the United States is broken.
Yep.
And it's set up for the nonprofit world to fail. So here we are, you know, nonprofits trying to make the planet a better place,
mm-hmm.
trying to deal with enormous issues like hunger, poverty, cancer, all of these things. And the system itself is rigged for us to fail.
Yeah.
And we are all indoctrinated into the system, like, oh, overhead is a bad word, you know, and people should not be get paid, you know, all of these
profit margins.
Myths, profit margins, you know, how can we get a market share on making the planet a better place when we have no access to the market?
Yeah.
So I think we need to think about the way that charity works and just flip it on its head.
Yeah. Well, you guys are definitely on your way. And it's just so cool seeing that you guys have.
So we got to talk to Christina Mittermeier.
Yeah.
Oh, stop it.
Oh, wait a minute. No, I do have. So
you heard me. How?
I have a, we have a member of our team, Noah, who is a huge, huge fan of yours.
Yeah, so, he's a photographer himself, and
so
he loves...
if you could just say hi to Noah, he would lose his mind.
Hey, Noah! It's so good to meet you.
All right, Noah, there's your shout out. When I put the post up last night, he DM'd me. He's like, "Holy crap, you're talking to her! Oh my god, I love her. Her work's amazing." Sorry for embarrassing you, Noah.
So sweet. I went to a restaurant last week. I mean, this was so good, with my mother-in-law. And I took her out to dinner, and we had this beautiful dinner. And at the end, the waitress came to me and said, "I don't want to weird you out, but I'm a huge fan." And I was like, "Oh my God, my mother-in-law sees that I'm cool. This is good." And I said to her, you know, because she's a marine biologist, that she gave me her number. And I said, you know, I'll keep an eye out for opportunities for people like you. And I saw later that she donated $1,000 to Sea Legacy, because I recognized the name. And I was like, oh my God, you know.
Wow.
That's amazing.
It's amazing. Amazing. So I'm convinced that we can still turn this thing around. It's going to take all of us. I cannot do it alone. You cannot do it alone. But together.
We're in the majority.
We
power to the people.
We are in the majority.
Yeah.
The power of the people who want a better planet.
Who want to survive.
Yeah. I feel like.
Who want to have a pretty place to live in.
Just
which
like
is...
a general reminder. Like, guys, there's only one.
Air.
Yeah, there's only one.
By the way, fantastic name.
Oh, yeah. Whoever coined that.
Oh, I'm so glad you like it, Dan. We didn't want to go with something that was so environmental that it would make people that are not in the environmental movement feel like they're not part of it. So, yeah, only one way to do this, and that is together.
Only one way, only one planet, only one ocean. Only one.
There you go, Mario. You're hired.
Yeah, I'm hired.
I like we're going to have to discuss that. He's a crucial asset to this company, and I literally can't do this or that. Okay, then fine. We'll come on board. We will come.
I want to come and work for you.
Yeah, you are also hired. I doubt I can afford you, but you are hired on a volunteer basis. But for real, anytime you need people, again, I could hold a camera, not that great with it, but if you need someone who could pick up heavy stuff and then he could do camera stuff, we're your guys.
I'm also very tall. I'm 6'6". If you need like me.
6'6"?
Yeah.
Are you kidding me?
Almost 2 meters tall. So that's I could like put a rope over a tree and like.
He's great at that stuff.
Do anything that you need me to do.
But in all seriousness, you guys know what's the most important ingredient of this thing that we do? It's the audio. Without proper audio, nothing works. And so there's a need for guys with your skills out there, and that's how we tell stories, with good audio.
Oh wow.
All right, so we're gonna
we got some homework.
We gotta get a boat, and we're gonna meet you in the Galapagos.
Yeah, we're gonna meet you in the Galapagos. We're just gonna you don't need to tell us where you are. We'll just walk around.
We'll figure it out.
We'll find it.
Moro's super
you'll see
resourceful.
The orange sails.
All right.
I so love talking to you today. Thank
let's
you
plug,
so much.
Let's plug some socials so real quick.
Yes. Where can everybody find you? Find you, find Sea Legacy,
find
Paul.
So Instagram is our biggest, communications tool. I am at Mitty, MITTY, which is short for Mittermeier. Sea Legacy is at Sea Legacy, and Only One is at Only One. And we have website, sealegacy.org and only.one. Come and find us. Come become part of this community. I promise you, you're not going to regret it. And hey, together we are going to change the planet. We're going to make it a livable place again.
Oh, I love that. I just got chilled.
That's the perfect place to end it. Yeah. Christina, thank you for all the work that you do. Thank Paul for us. Tell him we'd love to talk to him in the future.
I'll get him to you.
And we can't wait to see you in the Galapagos. We have purchased our tickets, and we will see you there.
We will see you there. Can't wait. And to your listeners, thank you, everybody, for loving animals. And thank you, too. I really love this.